Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. A reminder that our weekly premium newsletter is a time-conscious way to keep up on important economic and investing news and information. Each week it includes My Market Update, stock ideas, timely portfolio management suggestions. And if you'd like to try our newsletter, just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to the bottom of the page. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, October 3rd, 2016 edition of InvestTalk. And as always, InvestTalk is a kind of round table discussion with you, the listener. And we hope you'll be a part of the show today. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us by phone whenever and wherever you listen, whether it's live 4 to 5 Pacific time. You might be streaming it on investtalk.com or listening on a terrestrial stations. However you are catching us, you can call in, ask your question between those times. Or if you're a podcast listener, you can always call in after hours and leave a message, and we will answer it on the next show. And I always encourage everybody who's listening to make the call sooner rather than later. Don't push yourself until the end of the hour. If you have a question, pick up the phone, and we'll get to you as soon as possible. Now, we spend a great deal of time talking about individual stocks because that's what a lot of people will call in to discuss. But do you feel confident that you have the tools and knowledge you need to properly evaluate a stock purchase, or maybe current holdings that you have now? Should you keep them? Remember, there's two types of opportunity. It's buying what you don't already own, and it's selling what you do own. Okay, both of those can be an opportunity, but you have to do the analysis to make sure it's an opportunity. Sometimes the opportunity is to do nothing. And that's to not buy or to not sell as well. So it's always a constant analysis that you need to make when investing in any companies. There are numerous factors that you must consider, but many people tend to focus on just one factor. That's the issue. You know, they think of just an exciting product, right? Or an exciting industry. Or an article that was written about them, or a recommendation from Cramer on CNBC, or a recommendation from their cousin or their friend. And then they ignore or maybe just glance at the rest of the story. Every company has pros and cons that must be weighed and understood before action is taken. Now, here's a list of questions you can ask yourself before you pull the trigger on a buy or sell decision. What kind of company is this? Is it a long-term growth name? Is it a dividend payer with a long track record of profitability? Is it a volatile name? What type of risk are you taking in it? What type of risk does their business have? Is it cyclical? Is it anti-cyclical? Then how might this fit in my portfolio? Does it fit my risk profile? Does it fit my goals that I am looking to achieve? Growth names tend to have a higher degree of volatility than, say, blue chip dividend paying names. But that doesn't mean big blue chip dividend paying names don't have risks involved. You go back and look in the S&P 500 30 years ago, it's much different than it is today. Why? Because many of those big blue chip names fell off the map over those years. So understand that it's not without risk. And then you got to look at what type of products or services do they sell? How susceptible are they to their competitors? How susceptible are they to the economic cycle? What about input costs such as labor, such as commodity prices? All of these things have to be considered. What kind of trends exist in the industry? Are they going along with that trend, or are they fighting the trends? Where are we now in the current economic cycle? And do they tend to do well during this time? Some type of companies tend to do better during down economic cycles. They can be anti-cyclical. Then what type of losses are you willing to take? Right? Because there's always risk in every investment, every investment, every investment. Every investment. I said that three times, yes. For a reason. Because there's always a potential for loss. What are you comfortable taking? Then there's, of course, the fundamentals of the specific company. Do they make money? How much? What are their profit margins? Do they have a lot of debt in their balance sheet? How safe are they as a company? These are questions you need to ask yourself, and you need to find answers for those questions. And the more information you can obtain, the greater degree of confidence you will have, and the lower the chance you will have of making a mistake. And try to be honest. Don't be biased. Have the ability to recognize the downside risks and make sure that they don't outweigh the upside risk. Investing is a process, and it's an art to a degree. It's not an exact science. There are many ways to skin the cat. But don't be as discouraged by losses either. Learn from your mistakes and move on. And if you do that, in the long run, you'll come out ahead if you can continue to learn. And that's why you're here. So you're making the first step in the right directions. And, you know, how can we help you today? I welcome your questions. I want to hear from you. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time. You can call whenever it is handy, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. It's our anytime number. You can leave a message and we'll answer it on the next Invest Talk. But first, we're going to go to a live caller. Antonia.
Antonia.
How you doing? You're from Santa Cruz.
Hey, that's right. Okay. So a quick question. I'm kind of new to you know, kind of playing around with stocks, and I'm using the Robinhood app to mm-hmm. do, quick little stock trades. Yep. But the main question I have is about the IPOs that are happening this week. I don't know if you covered this last week at all. In particular, there's one from Camping World, which is that retail outlet that supplies products to, you know, RV mm-hmm. RV folks and camping folks. I was wondering if you had any thoughts about those guys.
Camping World. So they just came out, it looks like.
It'll be Thursday is the IPO. There's six IPOs on Thursday.
Gotcha. I don't know much about them. How long have you been listening to the show?
Not too long, just
okay.
A week or two.
Okay, so we're not huge fans of IPOs, and not that you can't make money on them, not that they can't be good investments, because they can. I think you just have to have an extra level of skepticism, because you have to think about what is happening in an IPO. Okay, what an IPO is, the insiders of the company, right, because it's privately held, they're going to go public, and they're selling their shares to the public, okay? The insiders, the people that know the most about the business, they're the ones that are selling to tend to be the people that know the least about the business, which is the public, right? So if you are an insider of any company, when are you going to sell?
Right when you go public, I imagine.
Well, you're not going to go public unless it's very advantageous to you, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So,
yes.
So that's why IPOs tend to be very overvalued, because it's the insiders that are either saying, wow, we can get this much for our shares. We can get a valuation on this company for this much. Let's sell. Or they say, this, you know, things are looking good now, but we're not very optimistic about the future. So we need to go public and cash out today. Okay? So it's, you know, those are the two pieces of thinking. Is that's pretty much what why you go IPO, because insiders are not going to sell stock in the company unless they feel they're getting a very good value for it, right? Which means that the purchaser of that stock is probably not getting the greatest value. Make sense? So I don't know much about Camping World. I have to look into the fundamentals. I don't have any data on it yet because it really hasn't been IPO yet. I haven't looked at it, to be honest with you. So all I would say is be very skeptical of it. Their numbers are probably going to look great because they help the books, you know, beforehand to make it look like it's a great story. This is where you go into the industry. Who are their competitors? What the trends in the industries are? Was it Bass Pro Shops bought Cabela's today? Wasn't that the news?
Sounds right.
Yeah. So, you know, there's obviously consolidation in the industry. Is that a positive or a negative for, you know, a name like Camping World? I wish I could give you more context of that particular investment, but I think it's better to just understand the IPO world in general and just be very skeptical of it.
Okay. So I have a curveball for you. Do you mind if I ask one more question?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, so the other IPO, and I'm definitely going to take your advice, of course, but I was going to kind of watch right after the IPO, see if it goes down a little bit, and a lot of times it seems like there's a little bit of an uptick afterwards. So given that, the other IPO that's happening, or one of the other six, is called Azure, and they're a company that is rolling out, they're like an electrical company, they're rolling out electrical infrastructure in India. Mm-hmm. I guess they're an American company, but they get bids from, I mean, they bid against government contracts for to build electrical facilities. So that sounds like getting in on the ground floor of a utility, albeit in India. So
yeah,
I was wondering if you think
once again, it's these stories are exciting, but it's all about valuation. I have to look at the valuation, and you know, you have to weigh the pros and cons, and you know, not get caught up in the story. That's what so many people do, especially on IPOs, is they get caught up in the story. So don't get caught up in the story. Look at the valuation, and stay rational.
Okay.
The stories get you emotional. Stay rational, and you'll be better off. Thanks for the call.
So cool. Thank you.
No problem. Now, what habits would lead a young investor in the right direction? You know, build a sound financial future. And we're going to talk about that today. Six lessons for a beginning investor. And then I have some other talking points as well. Now, our InvestTalk Insider program is a gateway to information. And we have a very extensive library of webinars now on all sorts of investing topics, from managing risk to managing a bond portfolio. There are so many monthly economic projections as well that come to you via email that I'm working on this week. And there's info sheets of all sorts of money topics. It doesn't cost a thing. There's a lot of material there. So to sign up, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you can get connected right now and ask your question. So our main talking points today are six lessons for the beginning investor. I'm going to discuss that. I also want to get to what are the topics, the issues that are plaguing Europe right now. What's really giving investors heartburn? And I think this is where everyone's focus needs to be, because this is really where the systematic risk, I think, still exists and will probably come to a head very, very soon. So we're going to talk about that. And then two Fed GDP trackers, and what are they showing for the economy? Are they trending positively, trending negatively? And then finally, if we have time, how does an IRA work after retirement? What are the rules around it? Just get familiar and make sure you're not making any mistakes when you're going in. Now give us a call. We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART. That's how you get through right now on Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART. Give us a call sooner rather than later. I know people have questions, just like Ken does in San Jose. How you doing, Ken?
I'm doing good, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making
it. I had a question about Ginnie Mae funds.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on some cash, and I was wondering if Ginnie Mae funds would be a good alternate. There's an ETF called GNMA, but there's also Vanguard and Fidelity mutual funds.
What are you, looking to stay safe with this? What's your goal with this money?
Actually, I don't need the money right now. So instead of sitting on cash with almost 0% interest, I was wondering if this would be a safe with very little downside risk.
Well, I wouldn't say
I think
this
it
as...
stays around 3%.
Yeah, well, the GNMA looks like it's only yielding about 1.5% is what I'm seeing. Is that what you're seeing?
Okay. I kind of see like around 3% if I go to, you know, the VFIIX fund from Vanguard.
Yeah, that's not what... Oh, what's the symbol on that one? VI what?
VFIIX.
VF, there we go. Okay. I'm looking at 2.3% trailing 12-month yield. It looks like you probably wouldn't get much more than 2 and change. And this has it's not super long-term. It's kind of relatively short-term, so that's not terrible. But don't think you're going to get big yield out of it. There's certainly risk with this, so don't think that it's no risk. And the reason is because if bond yields rise, this will certainly take a hit. And if you look back during the taper tantrum 2011, when it was at about 1120, it fell to about 1040. So that's about a 8% drop, 8-9% drop in the price of this fund. And that's because interest rates started rising. And I can easily see this getting back down into the mid-10s, and now it's at 1088. So there's certainly some interest rate risk involved. Now, it's certainly not high risk by any means, but understand there is some risk. Although limited, there is some risk. Mm-hmm. So I don't love it. I kind of like it if you're trying to be low risk and get some yield, but understand there is still risk involved.
Okay. Thanks.
No problem, Ken. Thanks for calling. That was GNMA is an ETF. He's also looking at the Vanguard Jenny Mae Fund as well, VFIIX. Now let's talk about some lessons that you can partake either on yourself or on the younger brethren in your family or friends or whatever of some lessons for beginning investors. What are some basic lessons I think everybody should learn? The first is start small. I see so many people rushing in to invest and they think they're going to make big money and they just want to make money. And that's why they're getting it. They want to make money. And they think, well, I can't just do it at $1,000 or $500. I need to put big money in so I can make big money. Well, you're just opening yourself up to big losses. So starting small is very important, and I think that's so everybody should begin investing. $1,000, couple thousand dollars, you're not going to kill yourself with losses if you make big mistakes. Even starting with paper trading accounts as well. There's plenty of those systems online for free, and it's the first thing you need to do to start investing. And then you need to do it when you're young. Number two is don't wait. Don't wait around. Don't make excuses. Just do it. Act on it. Okay? Then saving money is essential to becoming a successful investor. The very act of saving is deferring gratification, right? Because you can spend that money on something else today. Now, if you can start changing your mindset, it can become a habit. It doesn't have to be onerous. And it's only onerous if you feel and think like it's onerous. Okay? So just making small cutbacks to your expenses can really help you save. But most important thing is to have the mindset that you need to save money on a consistent basis. Then number three is acquire knowledge. And the continuing to acquire knowledge. No matter where you start, you have to be consistent at it. Just like anything, nobody's going to be good at anything by just working at it an hour or two a month. you have to really get into this and make it part of your reading, a part of your search for knowledge broadly, not just about investing, but you know, everybody should be searching for knowledge on all types of topics, and this needs to be one of them if you're going to be successful. Number four, put your investing on autopilot. Invest in your 401k, maybe automatic savings in an IRA, whatever it is, put it on autopilot. Number five, be patient. Don't expect to make big money right off the bat. It's not going to happen. This is a get-rich-slow type of game. It's not a get-rich-quick. And that leads to number six, the last one. Don't get caught up in the hype of get-rich-quick schemes or stories about IPOs. Bring it down. Think logically. Don't get caught in emotional decisions. That's where you'll make the biggest mistakes. Now, we're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. That's how you can get through right now. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, and this is InvestTalk.
InvestTalk continues now. Both Steve and Justin appreciate your participation through your calls, your emails, and notes via investtalk.com. If you have a suggestion for our podcast for a topic that you'd like to hear more about, please do contact us through our 24-hour listener line or by clicking Contact Steve or Justin on investtalk.com. You're listening to Invest Talk for Monday, October 3rd. They're touted as a safe, low-risk solution to funding your retirement, and they do offer some comfy factors. But costs and compromises are also part of the package. The four knocks on annuities. That's next time. But you can still set the topic for today. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now.
Let's go to Arias in San Diego. How are you doing, Arias? You there, Arias? Hello, hello. I think we lost him. I guess he's... Arias, you there? Hello, Arias.
Justin, you hear me?
I can, yes. How you doing?
Okay, good. I don't know what happened there. Quick question for you.
Sure.
Because I know you deal with real estate. You mm-hmm. talked about it.
Yep.
What is your take on buying real estate through tax lien certificates, and how would one go about using that?
To be frank, I haven't had a ton of experience with that. From what I know, they're very high risk endeavors, and they're kind of a one-off endeavors. You have to look at each situation a little bit differently. I don't think you can lump any one into, or you can't lump them all into one yes or no. Each situation depends on, what the parameters are, what your yield is, what the value of the property is, how much debt is on it, who are the, who's the lien against, etc. So each one has to be evaluated on its own particular merits.
Okay, so it just depends, like you said, on a lot of parameters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to look at each one in its. For its own merit and its own situation. I can't tell you that they're all good or they're all bad. And you need to work with somebody, preferably somebody who understands the market in the areas that property is in. And that will go a long way to making sure you're making the right decision. But I can't really give you a blanket statement on them.
Okay. Appreciate it very much. Thanks.
No problem. Thanks for calling. That was Arias from San Diego. Now let's get to Europe. Europe, what is plaguing Europe? What's giving investors heartburn? I've been talking about Deutsche Bank, and there are some other issues, however. Now, many of the underlying problems that surround Europe are the same that date back to the 2009-2012 time frame when we were talking about the European Union breaking up and the problems with Greece, etc. The bottom line is there are too many countries that are uncompetitive in the Euro bloc, especially the periphery. There's questions about sovereign debt sustainability, and there's a lot of companies and a lot of countries and a lot of debt there. And they have poor growth overall because of the structure of their economies and laws around labor and the welfare state, etc. And this really has not been addressed. You know, the ECB came out and printed money and said, we're going to do whatever it takes. But guess what? Did that solve the underlying fundamental factors that caused the European crisis during that time? Absolutely not. It's just all been hidden. And that's just what central bank money printing does. It just hides the problems for a short period of time and allows politicians to do nothing. Why? Because interest rates are down, asset prices are up, and unemployment's down or falling maybe. And as long as unemployment's going in the right direction, you know, everything's kind of okay. And that's really the issue. All right. And so really, it's central banks are starting to realize this, and they're starting to realize that they're running out of tools to boost the economy and to increase inflation. And this leads us to Germany and Deutsche Bank. Now, shares rebounded on Friday, and I'll give you a little hint. We were not buyers of that rally in European bank shares. We were actually sellers. If you know what I'm talking about, you'll probably realize what we did on Friday. But we're not buying it. And the reason it bounced on Friday, Deutsche Bank bounced 14%, was because there was a rumor, and I think this is a rumor for end of quarter window dressing, but the rumor that the Department of Justice was going to lower their fine from $14 billion to $5 billion. Well, there's been no confirmation from either side about that. And the market, obviously Deutsche Bank was down again today. The market was down overall. And now many analysts are comparing or are quick to downplay the comparisons to Lehman Brothers in 2008. But the fact is Deutsche Bank is crucial to systematic risk by virtue of their multi-trillion dollars in derivatives. They're counterparty to a lot of derivatives. So this is hanging over Deutsche Bank. It's hanging over Europe. It's hanging over the financial sector in the near term. And their CEO, John Cryan, has said that the lender has no plans to issue more equity. But short sellers are saying another thing. And that is that they're either going to go bankrupt, they're going to have to raise capital, or they're going to have to be bailed out by Germany, and I think it'll be the latter. It'll be bailed out by some point. Now, while Deutsche Bank is the biggest worry from the banking sector in Europe, it is by no means the only weak bank in Europe. There are plenty in Italy that remain a source of concern. So that's the biggest issue in Europe, is that negative interest rates pushed by the European Central Bank has made it almost impossible for these European banks to make money. Number two, Italy is heading to the polls on December 4th to vote on a referendum on constitutional reforms that will streamline the country's legislature, meaning, in simple terms, that a no vote will leave Italy far from an exit scenario, but they have a very high anti-euro sentiment. Meaning, if they vote no on this, they're likely headed for a referendum on being in the euro. And out of all the countries in the euro, they have the lowest support for the European Union as a whole. Right now, it's under 50% by the latest polls, which is the lowest in Europe. So this would, if this happens, it would signal a new risk-off scenario for the European Union, very similar to Brexit. And then number three is leading to Brexit. In case anybody had any doubts that Brexit was happening, British Prime Minister Theresa May on Sunday said London would start the exit process from the EU by the end of March. Now, the UK will likely face EU Common External Tariff System, which is a complex list of all sorts of different tariffs and import on all types of imports. That includes a 15% food tax on imports, 10% for car imports, 5% for car components. And this would be very painful for the European or the UK economy because imports would now cost anywhere from 5 to 15% more. Certainly, that would be impactful. And then finally, like I said before, the ECB is running out of tools. They're running out of eligible assets to buy. And they're not seeing the type of economic growth that they expected from all of this money printing and asset buying that they have undertaken. So this is one of the reasons, and I think a lot of central banks around the world are starting to realize this, and that's why I think you're going to start seeing a rise in yield broadly. Because if central banks around the world start to admit that they don't know what they're doing, this is financial alchemy at its finest, or worst, however you want to look at it, and then they're running out of tools and they can't do any more, well, all of a sudden these trades of one-way trades of lower and lower interest rates are going to reverse and it is going to be fairly ugly. So that is what is emanating out of Europe and out of the global central banks that is plaguing the market right now. And that's why I think the next big move in the market is likely to be lower. Now, one of the most popular topics on Invest Talk is real estate. Now, mostly, I'm sure, because so many people have a stake in it. They usually are owners of real estate. Now, real estate questions usually are very specific, however, related to everyone's personal situation. You know, one property could be fantastic for one person, and it can be a terrible decision for another. It all depends on each person's individual situation. Now, if you have a question about real estate, I can be a source for that. You can ask me directly. I'm a licensed realtor and work with a team of professionals all around the country that can give you an experienced opinion. If you have any questions, just click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com, and I will get right back to you.
InvestTalk is made possible each weekday by KPP Financial, serving clients all across the country. Steve and Justin believe this new system, My401k, can help meet a serious challenge for the average investor. My401k ranks your current 401k investment options within your employer's specific plan based on current trends and long-term performance, then builds a portfolio that fits your personal risk tolerance. Take a look. Click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com and then My401k.
Hello, I'm looking at FNMA, Fannie Mae. I recently checked out the Fortune 500 list, who had them as number 16 with revenues last year topping $110 billion. So obviously they're making revenues way up there, you know, comparable to the rest of the United States corporations. One thing that sets them apart is their price for stock. And it's been hovering around, you know, $2 range for, you know, a good bit. And I'm just curious as to what is your reasoning as to why the price is so low, and then do you think it has potential to eventually go up in price? Thank you so much. Have a great week.
All right, well, first I need to correct a line of thinking that you have, and I think a lot of investors have this, so don't feel bad, is that they associate the price of a stock with how cheap it is, right? So Fannie Mae right now is trading at $1.69 a share at the close today. Now the average investor will say, that's cheap. It's $1.69. That's cheap. Uh-uh. That's not how you should think. In fact, there are far more companies trading for over $1,000 a share that are in fact cheap than there are that are trading under $5 a share that are in fact cheap. Let me say that again. There are a lot more companies trading over $1,000 a share that are better values than there are companies that are under $5 a share that are good values. Okay? Don't associate the price that a stock is trading at with how cheap it is. Never. How cheap a company is comparison to earnings and cash flow and dividend and sales. Okay? That's what you need to understand. And then what is the market cap of the company versus those figures? Not the price of the shares. So never think that, oh, a stock that's trading at $30 a share is cheaper than a stock that's trading at $80 a share. So I'm just giving you kind of the middle of the road numbers too. There's no relation to how cheap a company is and the amount per share that it's trading for in the marketplace. You have to look at the market cap of the company, then compare it to profits, then compare it to revenue, compare it to cash flow and dividend. That's how you analyze a company, okay? So get that out of your head that $1.69 is a cheap stock. It is not. Now, the reason Fannie Mae has such high revenues and actually a pretty low market cap of only $1.9 billion is because the government owns it and it's taking all the profits from it. If you look at a diluted or split-adjusted share price, before the financial crisis, it hit a peak, let's say in 2000, of $82 a share. Or $89 a share. 2007, before really the financial crisis hit, it was at about a high of $70 a share in that year. Now it's at $1.69. Because the government bailed it out and took all the profits, as they should have. Don't buy Fannie Mae. Don't think that something trading for $1.69 is a cheap stock. In fact, it's more likely that it's overvalued at $1.69. It's more likely that a stock trading for $169 is cheaper than a stock that's trading for $1.69. This is the biggest misnomer that the average person has in their head. So you need to cleanse yourself. All of you need to cleanse yourself of what the underlying share price is trading at and how cheap that stock is. All right. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. What's your question? We have 10 minutes left in the show. We want to hear from you. What's your money question? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Manu in Fremont. How you doing, Manu?
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
I have a question regarding NXP Semiconductors.
Okay.
What do you think its value? Because it has gone up, I think, 25% due to Qualcomm buyout rumors.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, do I think it's going to go up more, possibly?
I don't know. I plan to short it.
Why would you want to short
Qualcomm,
it? You think Qualcomm's not going to buy it?
That's what I think.
I mean, I don't. Why? Why do you think that? Why do you think Qualcomm won't be buying them?
Why? Because there was an article also. It's a manufacturing company, and also the valuation. It's a $34 billion.
Okay.
Around $30 billion or $34 billion right now. If Qualcomm buys it, Qualcomm is $100 billion around, and how they are going to handle it, and that kind of thing.
Well, I think Qualcomm can buy it. Qualcomm does not have a lot of debt. They have a $100 billion company. They have good cash flow. You know, it's an environment where interest rates are low, and they can certainly use debt to purchase it. I would not short an XPI. I think that the odds of Qualcomm actually buying them are pretty good. This is an environment where consolidation is happening, and I don't think this is a false story. I think they're probably still negotiating. Could it fall through? Absolutely, it could fall through. But I think the risk versus reward here is not that great. So I wouldn't be shorting NXPI.
Because the already it went from 80 to 104 or 103.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's right now it's valued at about $35 billion at the current market cap. Could it be a little bit lower when they've finally announced the bid? It could. And it could be a couple months away, so there could be some gyrations in between. But I just don't think of this as a good opportunity unless you have a particular reason besides just pure conjecture that they're not going to make that purchase. I mean, I'm not hearing a basis for why you think that they wouldn't purchase it.
Because I think most of the time the rumors in last few months have not gone through for SO5 network. It fell the same amount in a few weeks if the deal doesn't go through, let's say in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the news articles are saying, because we own Qualcomm in our balanced income program. So, you know, obviously we're happy about that because Qualcomm's gone up because of this rumor. And we believe that Qualcomm will actually eventually purchase them. Now, can I guarantee it? No. Could they be overpaying? Possibly. And it could be the final bid could come in lower than where NXPI is trading. But I just don't see great risk versus reward on this. And I'm about risk versus reward. And that's what you should be as well, is finding good risk versus reward. And I don't see shorting NXPI as a good risk versus reward situation because I think it'll eventually come through.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Great question, though. I mean, I like your thinking, but that's just not something I would do. Now, what are the GDP trackers telling us about the economy for the third quarter? The third quarter just ended, and Atlanta Fed's GDP Now figure has now dropped from 3.5% a month ago for expected growth in the second quarter to only 2.2%. And the New York Fed's algorithms and statistical models are saying the exact same thing. So clearly, while that's stronger than what you saw in the first quarter and the second quarter, growth is not really accelerating very well for the third quarter. Just kind of a heads up there. Now, our time is up for this hour. I want to remind you that Steve sets aside a few hours each month for retirement reviews with listeners anywhere in the U.S. via Skype or telephone or FaceTime, if that's something that works for you, if you have an Apple product. Also, he will be in San Ramon October 25th. To reserve your hour, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. For Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, we thank you for listening today. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.